This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2020. We're exactly, I'd say, a little less than 12 hours away from the start of 2021. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Republic Bank of Chicago. I'm Rob Hart on the Noon Business Hour for today. We'll take a look at the dogs of the Dow in our next segment. But first, the number of people who are filing for first-time unemployment benefits unexpectedly fell last week, marking its second straight decline. Joining us with a look at the employment landscape and what lies ahead for the overall economy, welcoming Bob Bruska, who is the chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Bob, thanks for joining us today. Jobless claims declined by 19,000 to 787,000 in the week that ended on December 26th. That's according to the Labor Department. Now, is this a good sign, or is this simply a case of underreporting because of the holidays?
Yeah, well, we won't know. Typically around the holidays, you'll get some variation, unexpected variation in the claims data. And if you get a rogue estimate, it will be unwound in the next week or so. So during this time of year, you just have to realize that economic data becomes somewhat more tenuous. So maybe claims really fell and maybe they didn't. Maybe it was just people that, because of other holiday plans, didn't go to the didn't go to make their claims. But of course, people don't have a lot of options to do other things nowadays. So maybe it's more likely that it's real because there aren't many places you can go. There aren't many things you can do. COVID pretty much keeps you at home these days.
Well, in a normal time, you know, you would see some unwinding from the holiday season as a lot of those seasonal holiday jobs tend to wind down because Christmas and New Year's are over. What can we expect, though, in January as we enter, the second year now of COVID? Are we still going to be in this economic holding pattern, or could we see some signs of improvement now that the vaccine is here and some businesses can start making plans for 21?
Well, once again, you have to be somewhat careful about all of this. Since there was less hiring in December, in all likelihood, because of the change season and the online shopping, there will probably be fewer people furloughed in January. And the seasonal factors will be looking for a lot of people to be furloughed. And so what you could wind up seeing is a big unexpected job gain in January because fewer people were let go than expected because fewer people were hired in November and December. So that's how these economic data work, too. It's it's economically logical, but it's counterintuitive in another sense.
Now, could there be some potential pickup as some of these coronavirus restrictions that were imposed in late November begin to bear fruit? The curve at least goes down to a point where some hospitality or consumer-facing businesses that can begin at least hiring or calling workers back?
Well, that will happen eventually. I think it's too soon to expect to see that. And let's remember that even when businesses began to do that, quite apart from government restrictions, you're going to have a lot of people who are going to be reticent to put themselves in those circumstances because they're not going to be completely trusting that the virus has gone or that there has been enough vaccine out there or whatever. So it's not just what the government says. This isn't a game of Simon Says. People have their own free will and they may, trust the ability to go out and do things less than the government does. So it's very hard to know. I think we're going to transition very, very slowly back into the service sector.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning, or I should say this afternoon now. Bob Bruska, chief economist, Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Coming up, what does Chevron, Verizon, and Coca-Cola, what did they all have in common? They are some of this year's dogs of the Dow. We'll get the details coming up.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Dogs of the Dow. It's an investment strategy that attempts to beat the Dow Jones Industrial Average each year by optimizing toward high-yield components of the index. The basic concept is to allocate money to the 10 highest-yielding Dow stocks at the beginning of each year. Joining us now to explain is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecasts newsletter in Hammond, Indiana. Also the author of Winning with the Dow's Losers. Chuck, thanks for joining us this afternoon. And some of the 10 highest-yielding Dow stocks, the so-called dogs, Chevron, IBM, Dow Chemical, Walgreens, Verizon, 3M, Coca-Cola. What makes them at least one of the dogs of 2020?
Well, as you mentioned, the dogs of the Dow is selected based on dividend yield. So those 10 stocks are the highest yielding stocks based on dividend yield in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You know, what's behind the idea of the concept, which quite frankly has worked pretty well over the last several decades. It doesn't work every year. 2020 was a tougher year for it, and I can get into that in a moment. But typically what you're doing is you're being forced to be a contrarian investor, because the correlation is the higher the yield of the stocks in the Dow, it tends to correlate with stocks that have been underperforming in the Dow. And what you're trying to do is buy those underperformers and hope you get help from, you know, reversion to the mean, so to speak, and you get some help from those high dividend yields to produce a pretty good total return the following year. So it's an interesting way to take a piece of a portfolio and to focus on a different type of investment strategy, that being a bit of a contrarian approach. And historically, it has worked pretty well.
Now, a number of these stocks, the so-called dogs, you can kind of explain the travails their stock price may have had in 2020, not so much the yield, but the stock price. For example, Coca-Cola, you know, its business was exposed to a lot of venues, you know, sporting events, concert halls, and places where a lot of people gather, and you couldn't do that this year. However, if you wanted to position yourself pretty well for 2021, when there's a rush of people, hopefully, back to these public event spaces, you'd want to get on board there, or maybe energy companies that were hit by the fluctuations in oil prices. But some are interesting, like Walgreens or Merck. You know, these are companies that are involved in distributing pharmaceuticals or making pharmaceuticals. Why did they have a hard time in 2020, at least as their stock price is concerned?
Yeah, well, you know, they're well. Let's look at Merck, for example. Merck typically has a pretty high dividend. So it's not that Merck is a true contrarian play. It just is kind of underperformed, but it hasn't been crushed. So it's a stock in the pharmaceutical area. You know, a number of the large pharma companies actually were pretty laggards this year, so it's not unusual that you find a stock that's among the big mega pharmaceutical companies that lag. Merck was one of them. Walgreens is a different case, and Walgreens might be the doggiest of the Dow, because Walgreens was the worst performing stock in the Dow in 2019 and was among the two worst performing stocks in the Dow in 2020. So it's a company that, you know, continues to have to struggle to you know, really break out in that industry that's growing increasingly competitive. Now, the good news there from Walgreens' standpoint is in their latest quarter, last quarter, they had better earnings and they had better sales. There's some optimism that you'll see that trend continue here when they report earnings here over, I believe it's over the next week or two. And so there's some, you know, hope there. But, you know, if you're pinpointing one of the stocks that's probably the doggiest, it is Walgreens. And then the other factor that hurt, and you touched on it, was, you know, among the 10 dogs of the Dow were two energy stocks, Chevron. Well, in 2020, it was Chevron and Exxon. Exxon's no longer in the Dow, but going into 2021, Chevron is. And the energy patch, as you mentioned, just got decimated in 2020. So you were betting on rebounds in some areas that were really depressed in 2020, and that's what the strategy, quite frankly, is all about, buying rebounding, or hopefully stocks that are on the rebound the following year.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter based in Hammond, Indiana. Also the author of Winning with the Dow's Losers. It's 12:15. Coming up next, how travel credit cards have dramatically changed this year.
The best daily deal in Chicago. The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
2020 was the year that changed the credit card world, especially for travel cards. And joining us now on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line is Ted Rossman, who is the industry analyst at creditcards.com based in New York. Ted, thanks for joining us this afternoon on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. And he joins us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line. Ted, I'm one of the millions of Americans who has an airline credit card, but I have not been on a plane in over a year. And a thought that occurred to me a couple of weeks ago while I was making yet another credit card purchase is that at this point I probably have enough airline miles to go from here to the moon. What's going to happen to those of us who have built up these incredible frequent flyer balances just from doing all that contact-free shopping, but you still have no place to go?
Great questions, Rob, and very relatable to a lot of people. First of all, I think it makes sense to ask for that annual fee to be waived on your travel card. We found that 73% of people who asked this year got that annual fee waived or lowered. You know, just be honest. Maybe it's something like, hey, I'm a good customer. I've been with you a while. I pay on time. I just didn't use the travel perks this year. I'd like to make better use of them next year. Can you waive that fee? I would start with that. And you bring up a great point, too, about stockpiling these miles. Once the all clear is given on the health front, I think a ton of people are going to be looking to travel. And actually, it might make sense to get a trip on the calendar, maybe especially for the second half of the year right now, because it's something to look forward to. You get in before the prices go up. And also, when it comes to miles, if you have to cancel or reschedule, it's really easy to get those back with no penalty.
And then what are some of the ways in which, you know, some of these reward cards that may be tied to a specific brand or one specific thing, for example, travel, how are they trying to adapt to 2020 or at least the pandemic life and expand beyond the service for which it's originally been offered?
A ton of these cards have really leaned into the new normal this year. So that has meant things like groceries, food delivery, exercise equipment. You know, there's lots of perks out there, whether it's bonus points or whether it's credits for, let's say, what Chase is doing with Peloton, or maybe it's a free premium membership to a service like DoorDash or Instacart. I actually think a lot of this stuff will stick around because cardholders like using points and miles for everyday experiences. They like the premium memberships. The ability to redeem your points or miles at a higher rate on a card like Capital One Venture or Chase Sapphire Reserve, you know, it used to be only travel that got you the best rate. But now you can also redeem for, let's say, food delivery or something else like that, groceries, streaming services. People like that choice, and I think the card companies like the loyalty, and they like us using our points too. They don't want us to stockpile them. They want us to use it. So I think they'll give us more choices than ever.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com based in New York. Still ahead, everything you need to know about the next generation of gaming consoles.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio. WBBM, a Wisconsin hospital worker, is fired for allegedly deliberately ruining doses of the COVID vaccine.
This is Mike Krauser. Some bars openly flaunt the rules on New Year's Eve, others quietly, and the city of Chicago says it will be watching.
Stocks have been mostly flat today. We'll take a look at what's been happening on Wall Street. There's a whole new generation of game consoles on the market. We'll talk about them. business. Kind of a ho-hum day on Wall Street. The Dow is down 4.5 points. The NASDAQ is down 30. And the S&P 500 is flat. The AccuWeather forecast for this afternoon: cold with times of clouds and sunshine, a high today of 30. 26 degrees right now at O'Hare under mostly sunny skies at 12:31. The spoiling of hundreds of doses of the coronavirus vaccine at a health facility owned by Illinois-based Advocate Aurora Health has now reportedly become a criminal investigation. It's the latest story we first reported Tuesday on WBBM. Reporter Bruce Marcus has the update.
The former employee of Aurora Medical Center reportedly admitted removing 57 vials of the Moderna vaccine, which had to be kept refrigerated. That forced nearly 500 doses to be destroyed. The hospital initially thought human error was to blame. Aurora issued a statement saying vaccines are the way out of the pandemic. More than 21,000 healthcare workers have already received the first of two injections at the company's centers. Bruce Marcus for CBS News, Eagle River, Wisconsin.
While bars remain closed for indoor service, some in the suburbs are planning New Year's celebrations anyway.
Among those openly flaunting the restrictions, Stanley's Ale House and Restaurant in South Elgin. Owner Dawn Stanley told the Elgin Courier News they're having a 2020 sucked theme with trivia and karaoke. She said they can no longer afford to do only outside service and takeout, and being open is where the money is. There are others that will be doing indoor celebrations in Elgin and beyond. The city of Chicago is reminding establishments they could be fined $10,000 for violations. It also says residents should not have guests in their homes and says parties in event spaces and hotel rooms are banned and inspectors will be watching for violations. Mike Krauser, News Radio 105.9 FM.
The noon business hour continues, presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Stocks are trading mostly flat. Joining us now with a look on what's moving Wall Street is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist for National Securities in New York. Art, thanks for joining us on the noon business hour this afternoon. It's kind of what's the best way to describe it? A flat or just calm end to a very volatile year. What are some of the lessons that we have learned, at least on the financial side of the ledger here in 2020?
Yeah, amazingly bifurcated year, right? So we entered a year where we thought the market was going to have a great year. We had all-time high in the first week of February, and it looked like we're going to go a lot higher than that. And along came a coronavirus that caused us to slow the economy down, and we were down 40% in a blink of an eye. So the fastest bull market to bear market we've ever seen in Wall Street's history. Kind of hit the brakes on the sell-off on March 23rd, gradually increased and got better over the course of the spring and the summer. Hit a crescendo in the beginning of September, and then had a 10% sell-off because we got overbought in the near term and a little too excited about the potential for things like another round of stimulus. And then lo and behold, it's taken all the way until last week to get this last round of stimulus out the door. We've been talking about it since August. But you know, all along the way, we that first rally from March to September, largely driven by the work from home darlings and some mega cap technology days, the rally from the end of September into the end of the year, clearly driven by economically sensitive cyclicals. So I think we're at a better place with all time highs in a broader market. And I think it's really been a tale of three markets this year, and the last one's probably the most stable.
I mean, everyone would say the stock market is not the economy, and there are still millions of jobs that don't exist today that did exist on New Year's Eve of last year, and there are still a lot of people who are financially on the brink. And yet, it would seem that one of the stories of the year is the ability of the Federal Reserve to be very nimble and quickly jump in to address this crisis as it was unfolding.
Yeah, I would tell you the policy response that we saw clearly came at breakneck speed, both in the March-April timeframe and certainly throughout the pandemic. The Fed has been very resolute, sticking to its knitting, making sure interest rates are low, but also, you know, using their other tools like increasing the size of their balance sheet. All of that has been stimulus. The fiscal stimulus response was quick in the spring and very slow in the fall. It ground to a painful gridlock that really cost a lot of businesses. And I think there's going to be economic scarring because of the fact that gridlock held things up, helped another round of COVID aid. And I certainly think that's going to be something we'll look back upon and say we needed to react faster. And there should be more automatic things that can be done by the federal government when we have the kind of economic downturn that we saw.
How far down the road can you look into 2021? I mean, the vaccine is here. Millions of people have already received their first dose. Can businesses start making plans?
Yeah, I think that when you look ahead, you're probably talking about sometime in the second quarter and certainly into the second half that the behavior that has been postponed throughout all of 2020 starts to incrementally come back. That pent-up demand for goods and services that we've had to delay because we were working from home, because of the pandemic, because we couldn't gather in groups or participate in certain activities where we're close to each other. I think that starts coming back. Right? I think as that comes back, the more economic activity you'll see. So I think there's going to be a huge surge in economic activity in the back half of next year and into 22. And I think that starts to manifest itself in the second quarter when we start to get to that place where, 25, 30, 40% of the population is immunized or has received a vaccine.
All right. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities based in New York. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, a look at the latest generation of video game consoles.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the WBBM Noon Business Hour with the release of the PS5 and the brand new Xbox. A new generation of gaming consoles has officially been ushered in. Joining us now on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line is Jason Schreier, video game industry reporter for Bloomberg News based in New York. Jason, thanks for joining us today. This scarcity in video game consoles, is this just a result of they both have a lot of fans already built in, or that there's this glut of people with a lot of disposable income and a lot of time looking for one more at-home amusement?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm going to give you a third answer, which is that COVID-19 has disrupted, just like it's disrupted everything else, it's disrupted the production lines and the supply lines for these companies. So Sony might have known that they were going to sell millions of PlayStation 5s, but they could only manufacture so much because it's so difficult to get things going these days. That, I think, is the biggest factor. And of course, everybody's stuck at home. People who have been able to keep their jobs do have some disposable income and they can't spend at bars and restaurants. So it's a combination of those factors, but I really think the biggest one is that supply pipeline just not being able to function the way that it used to.
In the world of gaming, what kind of pays the freight? What's the biggest driver of the gaming market? Is it console games or is it people playing games on their PCs?
It depends who you ask. I think that the mobile phone market, for example, has a humongous, humongous footprint in the video game industry. Consoles are also big and PCs are also big. These days, it's less about the platform you're on and more about the type of game you're playing because so many of these games are coming across platforms. You look at Fortnite, for example, which is probably the biggest game of the last 5 years. That is on everything. You can play it on your computer, you can play it on your console, and you can play it on your phone. So we're entering a world of gaming where the platform is less important than the content itself, sort of like you did for film and TV.
And what are some of the biggest, economic or money-making opportunities? Is it developing the consoles themselves, or mm-hmm. is it the games and the numerous in-app purchases that you can make?
It's the latter. It's the games that in-app purchases can make ridiculous amounts of money. Fortnite, like I mentioned, has really been a massive moneymaker for the company behind it, Epic Games. Another lucrative area of this world is, so the console manufacturers, often they're not making much money on the hardware. Sometimes they even sell these consoles at a loss. But they do make a lot of money on their stores where they sell digital games on the PlayStation Store, the Xbox Store, the Nintendo Store, and they take a 30% cut of every single game. So if you think about the many millions of games that are sold every single year on these stores, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, they're raking in some big money from that.
If you checked out, let's just say, if you checked out of the video game world right around the time Super Mario Kart was released on Super Nintendo, I'm talking 25, 26, 27 years ago, the world of computer gaming is, it combines a lot of different things now. It's an entertainment platform. They're movies. People talk about special effects. There are in-app purchases. There are social media opportunities. Entire social spheres develop around these games. How is this going to evolve in 2021?
Yeah, I think what we saw this year was that people use games to escape the terrible reality that we're all living in, not just in the sense that they were inhabiting other worlds, but also that they could actually inhabit those worlds with their friends. I mean, people have used games like Fortnite as a social platform. My wife and I, for example, we play a game called Jackbox Party Pack, which is kind of a social game that you can play with friends. Every couple of weeks, we get together with a bunch of friends on Zoom or FaceTime, and we all play together. And it's become kind of a useful substitute social activity this year in a world where we can't actually make much physical contact. I can see that carrying on to 2021. Certainly as things get back to normal, we might see some sales drops. But the video game industry is bigger than it's ever been. More people are playing games than they ever have. I've heard anecdotally and seen some trends of people who maybe didn't follow games, haven't followed games in 20 years since Super Mario Kart and the Super Nintendo, but have started getting back into it or rediscovering it, redefining games that really speak to them. And it's really incredible to see because it's such a wonderful medium and just really has something to offer for anybody, whether you're a housewife in your 50s and you just want to play a game on Facebook or on your phone, or whether you're younger, maybe you grew up with something, maybe you're in your 30s or 40s, you grew up with Super Nintendo games and you want to find something that kind of appeals to that nostalgia. There's really something for everyone.
Thanks for joining us today, Jason Schreier, video game industry reporter for Bloomberg News based in New York. Still to come, a local business that brings joy to the art of the balloon.
Download the WBBM Noon Business Hour podcast, or if you missed only a portion, rewind on the radio.com app.
Created during the pandemic, Luft Balloons offers some New Year's Eve flair in these unprecedented times. We welcome in Elaine Fry, founder and owner of Luft Balloons here in Chicago. Elaine, thanks for joining us today. Before we talk about just the evolution of your business throughout the this year of 2020, what are you doing for people on New Year's Eve?
Well, we have almost sold out of everything, but we did a great balloon drop. We have a great New Year's bouquet, and some 2021 hello, goodbye. You know, we got a bunch of stuff online, and just check for the sold out, and that way you can get the other stuff that's available.
Now, in the before time, in the pre-pandemic time, the bulk of your business was large events, but once those large events were largely canceled, you guys had to be nimble. You had to pivot, that P word that is marked 2020. So what was the Luft Balloons pivot this year?
Sure. So we basically took our aesthetic, our abstract art that we did in those big installs, and condensed it down into a burst form that was manageable for people to put on their front porches, their fences, or inside their home to bring that celebration inside and to a smaller scale and connect each other visually as opposed to being at events.
A lot of business owners, you know, could spend their entire life trying to find some sort of world-altering invention. They want to be the next Steve Jobs. They want to be the next Mark Zuckerberg. But a lot of companies, yours, sign companies, lawn sign companies, just found themselves well-positioned for this era of social distancing and everyone's need to reach out in the safest way possible.
Yeah, as a small business owner, you can be a little bit more nimble and respond to what's happening real time. And so we just connect with our community. And, you know, I'm a mom. I'm a person who has a birthday, you know, and I just kind of think about myself and what I'm going through and family members are. And then we just try to create things of joy for everyone else.
And then lastly, when it comes to owning a small business, you know, how much creativity or mental creativity do you need as an entrepreneur to keep going, especially when things get weird?
It's 100% important. You know, like, you need a lot of it because you just need to think outside the box. Otherwise, why would anyone want to buy a balloon burst? You know, you got to tell them how to use it and what to do with it. So it's important.
Elaine Fry, founder and owner of Luft Balloons, based in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.